Of the future. They've been providing a means for new and budding writers to have a chance for the creative efforts to be seen and acknowledged. Welcome to Chatting with Sherry. Tonight we welcome back Elaine McCoe. We're going to talk about writing and inspiration and short stories and all kinds of interesting things. Here's Elaine. Hi, Elaine. Welcome back to the show.
Well, thank you, Sherry. It's so nice to be back. I remember we chatted a little more than a year ago.
Yeah, isn't it crazy how time flies?
Yes. But it's also wonderful for me because, when we spoke, I was a published finalist for Writers of the Future. That was volume 37. And now, it's pretty cool. Now I'm a winner for volume 39. So I'm terribly excited, really excited, so happy.
Oh, that is really cool. Congratulations.
Thank you.
We'll go more into that in a little bit.
Sure.
First, I want to find out, how you are, anything new, other than the winning that's happened to you?
Not much new. We're post-pandemic here, so people are finally beginning to emerge. I went to an event yesterday that was really cool. One of the local universities has started a Center for Innovation, and they had Space Day, and it was all about business opportunities in space, and that's like one of the events that probably a few months ago, before the vaccines, before the boosters, I would have been cautious about going to, but, now there was probably, 200 people there, and different vendors, and speakers from NASA, and it's great to be able to go out again, great to be able to mix with people again.
Yeah, I know, isn't it strange?
Yes, psychologically, I had to force myself. I was so used to, I live with a family member who's had some health challenges, and so it was very important that he not get sick, and I was being so cautious before, so cautious. He has since gotten better, and I don't need to be as careful, but it's very weird. The first time that I met live with people, I realized it had been about 2 years. I've been doing Zoom meetings and talking to people on the phone, but to be able to actually sit in the same room with folks, it was very strange. And I had a friend who saw me and wanted to hug me, and I was like, no, don't hug. And then I thought, what am I doing? So I held my breath and hugged her. So that was funny. But yes, it's getting back into the mindset, and part of it is trying to force yourself to do it. And that's what I'm doing. I'm trying to force myself. It's okay to go out now. It's okay.
You can still do cautions, if you have, your family member, they can go out, but they can put a mask on just to protect themselves.
Oh, absolutely. But it is funny here, when I went to that conference yesterday, as I said, probably, it was an all-day conference, people were floating in and out, but probably at any time, there were at least 200 people there. I would say there were 3 people wearing masks, and I was one of them. But only 3.
I know, people just have this idea that it's all gone, it was poof.
It isn't. Yeah, and it's not that it's gone, it's just guess people at some point are saying, okay, it's here, and we still have to live and try to enjoy ourselves a bit.
Yeah.
But yes, you're right about staying cautious, definitely.
Oh, yeah, especially if you're,
I
you have something.
I still try to maintain my distance, you know, things like that. But I am mixing more with people, and that certainly has changed since the last year when we spoke.
Yeah, I know. It's really strange the first time you go into a place with people.
Yeah.
You're like, oh dear, this is going
to
be weird.
Yeah, I remember the first time we went to a restaurant and there were a lot of tables available, but a woman sat close to us and I was like, let's move. Let's get out of here. Let's go to a table further away from her.
She's probably just trying to, with distance, connect.
right, or to be amused by listening to folks, because of course that's always fun to do. Fun to eavesdrop on other people.
Hey, you get dialogue that way.
That's absolutely correct. You can get dialogue, you can get interesting stories, you never know.
It always has been that way.
Right.
That's one of the things that I think is very interesting, especially if you read about other authors, older authors, and, you know, classic people. And, and you read how they get their dialogue, or even story ideas, it's by eavesdropping. Just being there.
Yeah.
Unobtrusive and just sitting there, and unobtrusively, like, writing on the back of an envelope or in a notepad or something.
Yeah. You're absolutely right. I mean, people start talking about their lives a little bit, and you start looking at it differently. You start thinking, wow, I could do something with this. This could be a great story. Or you meet somebody with an unusual name. I went to a bank to, I don't know, open an account to do something. But in any event, the bank manager, he had such a cool name, I wrote it down, and I said, I've got to save this for a character.
Well, hey, you never look at Agatha Christie. She was at a restaurant or something, and she heard people talking about somebody named Jane Finn, and that became a major character in the first Tommy and Tuppence novel.
Oh, wow. Isn't that something?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, same thing. You know, she just was sitting there, and she overheard people talking. Well, that's an
right.
interesting name. I'll just jot that down for later.
Yeah, just write it in and take it, and then that poor person reads his name in a book and says, but I'm not a murderer. Wait a minute.
Oh, Jane wasn't a murderer. She was the victim.
Oh, well.
She wasn't dead, but
then
she was kidnapped.
She read it and say, but I'm still alive.
No, she wasn't dead. She was still alive. She was just missing.
Okay.
She was a missing person.
Oh, okay.
But, But it was just an unusual name, Jane Finn.
Yes, yeah. One time I heard an author talk about, you know, it's funny, I don't remember what she wrote, but I just remember what she said about how she picked names, and I thought this was funny. She said, I keep the names very, very short so that I don't have to type long. So, all, you know, her name's Joe. Maybe something a little bit more exciting, but very short. And then, you know, I flipped through whatever it was that she had written, and I looked through it, and every name was like either three or four letters, and I thought that was funny.
And Christie used to use street names or station names, the names of train stations.
Like Paddington Bear,
well,
which was not Christie.
Actually,
yeah.
She got in trouble. There was a station called Bletchley.
Oh, yeah.
And, well, unfortunately, there was also a secret place called Bletchley where they were trying to break the German code.
Enigma. Right.
Right. Well, MI5 actually started when her book came out, and there was a character named Bletchley in it. They actually started investigating. Then when I think she did a written interview or a radio interview, and, oh, yes, I was just stuck at a train station, and I was bored, so it was my revenge on the station to give it such a nasty character.
Oh, that's funny.
And they said, oh, okay, we can drop this. Because they thought the what was going on was leaked to her, that she knew, because it was all spies and the fifth dimension and all this other stuff that the book was about. So, and well, you know what Bletchley is about. So they thought, somebody must have given her some information, and it turned out no.
Yeah, you know that happened with Tom Clancy. His first big book was The Hunt for Red October, and it was published, and it was about basically a Russian submarine, a Russian naval submarine, and the commander wanted to defect and whatever, and it's how the U.S. responds to it. So it's called The Hunt for Red October. That Red October was the name of the submarine. Tom Clancy was so accurate with his depictions of military operations, how the military would respond and things like that, that they thought someone had leaked information to them, and they conducted an investigation and really shocked the Navy, I guess the folks who were investigating, because he said, this is all public record. Uh-huh. And he showed all the research that he had done. And everything that those guys thought was secret was, no, I can go to the patent office and find this, and I can go to the office of, public information office and find this, and I could do that, and I could go to this congressional budget record and find, the money that was allocated for this engine design or whatever. And they were very surprised.
Yeah, that's funny. I always wondered, if I'm ever investigated, because I've actually researched the police in Israel and different things. Well, because I have a book I'm working on that takes place in Israel, and the way the police are the way the police are organized, they're completely different than any place else. It's not like anywhere. So I, in order to be accurate, I had to research it, and I was like, writing it up, and as I'm taking my notes, I'm going, I wonder if, and I, what's the name? Mossad.
Mossad.
I was wondering, I wonder if Mossad is seeing this.
Right, right. It is funny when you do that. I was, I was looking up something. And also for a short story, but I realized, my goodness, I'm typing stuff and what I'm Googling would probably mark me for either criminal activity or international espionage, and it's like, no, I'm just working on a short story, honest.
I know. You get kind of paranoid when you think about, especially when you hear, well, NSA is checking out, everybody looks at everything.
That's right. That's right.
And you're like, writer.
Honest, I'm just putting this in a story, please. Don't worry about it.
I know.
Oh, my.
I know. And I'm also in the habit, if I don't know what something means or what it is or where it is or anything, I put it in Google to look it up. And sometimes I think about it and I go, I wonder what they're thinking when they see stuff like that.
Yes. I wrote a story about the first homicide on the moon. It was a science fiction story.
Mm-hmm.
I needed to know how do people actually die in space? If, in movies, if a guy's helmet gets cracked, sometimes in movies, face explodes,
that's not right, yeah.
No, it's not right at all, it's completely wrong, but I had to investigate it, and then I was investigating other stuff, and I was investigating about international treaties that relate to the moon and things like that, and I realized, my goodness, if anybody looked at this, they would probably think that I'm trying to sabotage the Artemis program or something.
doing a science fiction story, and it was about a platform in space. So I was looking into ISS because it's our platform in space. And
right.
So I was reading the stuff, and I go, oh God, NASA's going to be mad at me for looking at their stuff.
Yeah, you wonder.
Yeah.
Oh well, it's a risk. We take the risk.
I know.
Okay.
But I mean, I compared to other people who are much more prolific than I am, their history and their computers must be much more interesting than mine is.
And the good news is that we, as you say, we have a very good explanation. It's like, no, I'm just writing a story, I swear. I'm just writing a story.
I can show it to you.
Right. I'll show it to anybody.
I know. And the one I was telling you about, the one that takes, I'm still working on it because I kind of got stuck, so I had to move to another story. That's what I do with writer's block. If I get stuck, I just move to another story.
Yeah. Some people say that works, and then you don't even know, but your brain's thinking about the story that you're stuck on, and then hopefully it'll go back to it, and then you'll go back to it.
Oh, yeah, I definitely will. I just haven't figured out how to fix it yet. I kind of wrote myself,
right.
When you write yourself into a corner, you have to take a step back and just let it percolate.
Yes, I agree. I've had stories that I get stuck in the middle, and it might be months before I figure it out and go back.
Oh yeah, it's really weird. And I actually wrote a novel, but it's still sitting on my desk because I have other novels that I'm working on. And I hope I don't die before the book. I do that as a book because it's just sitting there.
Oh, you should send it out. Send it out. Is it ready to be sent out?
Yeah, but I'm not ready to send it out. I still think I need to work on it more.
Okay.
I'm like that. I'm one of them.
That's okay. Everybody's different. It's fine. Whatever works, right?
Yeah. And all my books are different. I don't have any series or anything. Everything I've written has been the standalone. So it's not like anybody's hammering for it. They don't even know I wrote it.
Not yet, anyway.
Yeah.
But I appreciate standalone authors. I always get a little resentful when I really like a book and then it ends and then I have to wait 4 months. It's like, no. You've hooked me. Now you have to produce the next book right now. Within a week. So I appreciate standalone. Sometimes I won't even start. If I know that a book is supposed to be a trilogy and it looks interesting to me, and maybe book one's out, I won't even read it. I'll wait till after book three is out, and then I'll go for it.
I did not. I've collected the books until it's the last book, and then I start reading it.
Yes. If I have the patience to do that, that's how I like doing it. But see, so I am a fan of standalone, so you've got a fan. I as a reader, thank you for writing standalone.
Thank you. And they're all different genres, though. It's just it's people. And I remember I was at a book fair, and my first book and my second book both had an ink in it, like incorporated, but they were completely different books, and they weren't connected at all. And they were like, oh, well, I need to get this one and this one. And I'm like, should I tell them?
Out of honesty, probably.
I actually do. I said, no, they're not even connected in any way. Totally different. That's okay. They both look interesting. They still buy them. So I was okay. I was happy. But it was like, I'm like, they're not connected. That doesn't mean it's a series just because they both have ink at the end.
Right. Wow, that's a funny coincidence.
I didn't even think about it until people started asking me if it was a series.
Because
ink just means incorporated. That's what it means.
Right. Yeah, just by chance. Well, didn't J.K. she did Harry Potter, but then she went completely into, what, adult mystery, I think.
Yeah,
right?
Mystery.
It wasn't fantasy or science fiction.
No, yeah, she went, that's why she took a pen name, was so people, you know, wouldn't go cuckoo about her going into a different genre. I don't blame her. I mean, Agatha Christie started writing under Mary Westmacott because she wanted to do completely different books. And she did, like, 6 or 7 books under that name. And when even after they blew her cover, someone found, I think it was a reviewer, found out that Agatha Christie was Mary Westmacott, she didn't abandon the name. She just, I think she wrote, like, another 2 books. You know, even though everybody now knew it was Agatha Christie.
Right. Huh.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. And it was funny because she actually, went to her publisher that did her mysteries hated the Mary Westmacott. And they published the first 2, and when she sent in the 3rd one, they gave her a hard time, and she goes, well, you guys just don't have any kind of affection for it. So she actually found another publisher. So she had one, she kept the publisher she had for her mysteries, and she had another publisher for the other. It's really hard to put, I guess, just call it, there's no title for the type of book it is. It's fragile human dramas. So
it's fiction. It's literary fiction.
Yeah, it's literary fiction. It's not, and people used to call it romance, but if you read those books, they're not romantic. So it was like there was her mystery books, and then there was the Mary books. But it was so funny because they hated them. Collins just hated those books because they felt it drew her attention away from. More prose. That's all they wanted her to write was prose.
Look, they're not interested in her artistic expression. They're interested in book sales.
Uh-huh. Yeah, when she started writing the Miss Marples, again, they hated it.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Because it was taking her away from Perrault, and Perrault was the bestseller. But then when, she started with very intelligently with writing short stories.
And that was a big era of short stories because people loved them. They would read them. I know there were mystery magazines. There are some today as well, but it was really big then.
Yeah, and back then, actually, serial rights in a magazine was better than getting, you actually made more money. She bought her first car for the serial rights of The Murder of Roger Ackroyd. She couldn't have bought it from the book. That's how money she made from the serial rights of, that's why authors that have survived, there's some authors who never did a book, they only did serials. Because they made a good living.
Wow. You know, isn't that funny? Because I haven't really looked into it too much, but Amazon now has something called Kindle or Novella or something. I don't know. But basically, Amazon is letting independent authors put serials on, you know, parts 1, 2, 3, 4, whatever. And apparently, some authors have been very successful. So you write maybe a chapter or something and people buy it for 99 cents and then they wait for the next chapter. And it's become a stream of income for some independent authors and a good stream for those who manage to get a following.
It's only, because they don't do it on magazines anymore.
No, but Amazon just started it for the Kindle. Well, I say just started it. It's probably been going on at least 1 year, 2 years. It's fascinating. I haven't thought about doing it, but I admire those who do. And I understand that some people have been very successful. And I guess that has taken the place of the serials in the magazine.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think you see that too much anymore. A little bit in some of the sci-fi magazines.
And, you know, and that actually came through a whole different, sci-fi used to be in, what do they call it?
What, the pulp magazine?
The pulps, that's it.
Right, the pulps, absolutely.
And, people started doing their own short stories and books and stuff like that. But, yeah, the pulps were like, that was bread and butter to a lot of authors.
Oh, my goodness. Absolutely. Absolutely. I remember reading about Earl Stanley Gardner, the creator of Perry Mason. And, my goodness, he was an attorney before and was making a good living. But then he started writing for the pulp magazines, and that was it.
Yep.
He was making so much more money doing that, that he eventually dropped his law practice.
Well, I also think it helped to have the TV series.
Well, but that came later.
Oh, that came later? Okay.
Oh, it came so much later. He actually started writing, I think, in the late 1920s for the pulp magazines, and then in the 30s. Eventually, then it became like, believe it or not, it was a radio show for about 12 years.
Yeah.
And then came TV series.
And the radio show probably was good income.
I think so, sure. Definitely. During that time frame, absolutely. Absolutely.
And, you know, it's really interesting. In the 50s, they used to use radio as an audition for TV.
Right. Right.
To see if they could build an audience. You know, because all the networks, at that time, there were only 3 networks, everybody. That's it. That's your only choice.
That's right. But you know, the audio storytelling is coming back. I think this is the right name. There's something called Escape Pod, and they do audio stories, just like you're doing a podcast. You know, they have the audio stories. They're definitely coming back, and they're coming back through podcasters. That's also exciting because it's another venue for great storytelling. That's, you know, it's the old is becoming new again.
Yep.
Whether it's using Amazon to do the little serial stories, or whether it's places like Escape Pod to do the audio storytelling, which is just like the old radio shows, like Orson Welles' version of War of the Worlds that terrified everybody one Halloween night in the 1930s. Now they have other folks doing it.
I actually have a radio play series that I have.
Oh, that's right.
It's a very short radio play series. I mean, it's not. I usually only do about 4 or 5 plays. But yeah, I do that too. I like doing it. It's fun.
I think that's terrific. I actually did one in high school. It was a high school project for our drama club where we recorded a play, and we had to convert it, because it was supposed to be a stage play, but we converted it to an audio play where we'd have a narrator. You know, Sherry walks into the room. You know. I hope you heard my mock footsteps.
Yes,
there.
I do.
Oh, you did. Okay.
I always.
But that's a lot of fun.
Yeah, but it is a bit corny the way some of them are. You know, they take a cigarette and you can hear the lighter go off, and then they smoke it. I mean, and you hear them breathing in and out like they're puffing. I'm like, okay, that's a little much. Because I like to listen to old radio shows, and some of it is just really silly.
right. But some of it's fun.
Mm-hmm.
I had a late night job back, I was in my 20s, which is some time ago. And I was driving home probably around 10 p.m. or 11 p.m. And for some reason, some radio station was playing the old, and it was old back then, Lone Ranger radio shows. And I just loved it. It was so funny. I guess I was tired from the day, and then I'm driving you know, it's funny, but it's the same stuff. You still need the good storytelling.
Oh, yeah.
Nothing's going to work if the story isn't any good.
It all comes down to story.
Yes.
Yeah. I wanted to actually talk about your, how did you make a little tiny transition? How did you find...
Go ahead, podcaster extreme. No, go ahead, that's good.
How did you find out about your win for Writers of the Future?
Well, it was a little bit out of the blue. For people who do Writers of the Future, sometimes it's like this really long wait. You think, oh, the results are going to come out end of September, and then they don't, and then it's October, then it's middle of October. I had expected, for some reason, that the results would come out in October, but lo and behold, I got a phone call from Joni, who's a woman who works at Writers of the Future, and she's the one who alerts everybody, and she told me I was a finalist, and I couldn't believe it. That was I wasn't even anxious or waiting or going on the computer and checking the results every day. She called, and then once they tell you you're a finalist, you have to wait for the judges to decide who are the three winners, who are the three people who are going to be published in the book. And boy, was that a long wait, or at least it seemed long to me, because you just keep hoping, okay, is she going to tell me today? Is she going to tell me tomorrow? Is she going to tell me the next day? And I think about 9 days later, she called. When she calls, it doesn't come on the cell phone with a phone number. It comes up as private number, so no numbers. But she's the only private number person that I was expecting. So I just grabbed the phone, and I didn't even wait for her to say hello. I said, Joni, just tell me. Just tell me. I can take it. Go ahead. Just tell me. and it was her, you know, thank goodness. It wasn't somebody who thought I was an insane human being. And then she told me that I got third place, and I'm even having trouble talking to you now about how happy I am, because it was really incredible.
That's a great
thing.
It's a
wonderful thing.
So now you won. This is for which time? I mean, is it coming up?
This is for volume 39. Volume 39 is going to come out around May of 2023.
So when's the award ceremony?
Upcoming volume.
Do you know when the award ceremony will be?
End of April is what I believe they're aiming for. I believe they're aiming for end of April, maybe the last Friday in April. I suppose it could all change. I don't know whether it's set in stone. But I think the last Friday night in April is when they're going to have the award ceremony. And then I guess the book officially comes out the following Tuesday, which would be the first Tuesday in May. And that is, you know, again, you'd have to check with them, but I think that's probably what's planned for, at least right now. And of course, for me, that's tremendously exciting to be able to have that week-long conference, not just to meet the other authors in the book, but to be exposed to some of the top science fiction writers, to be able to meet with them and learn from them. Hear what works for them, and, you know, try to learn. I really want to mix with other writers, and this is going to be probably my first opportunity.
That's so cool.
To mix with professional writers, people who have succeeded in the field.
It's really cool when you meet a writer that you admire. It's like,
yeah.
You can't really even describe it. If you want to be a writer and you meet somebody, I remember I met Richard Matheson, who is a
oh great, my gosh.
He's one of my heroes.
He's fantastic.
Yeah.
He wrote for Twilight Zone.
Yeah. He wrote Somewhere in Time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, he's just one of my favorites. So I got to meet him. He was a very nice man, very quiet. And it was really sweet because he was there to promote another book, but I was obsessed, still am, with Somewhere in Time.
Uh-huh.
So I brought a copy of it in case he'll sign it. I wasn't sure if he would.
Wow.
So he was signing the book that he was there to promote, which I can't remember the name of it.
Uh-huh.
Which I have, but I can't remember the name of it.
Well, see, you were good that you bought it.
Oh, yeah, of course. I mean, you know,
right.
It does support. But I said, I have this book. Would you mind signing it? And it had a picture of Jane Seymour and Christopher Reeve on the cover.
Right.
It was like, you could tell when I bought it. I bought it when the movie came out.
Uh-huh.
And he goes, oh, yeah, of course. And he signed it, and he goes, so you're a big fan. Because I had it in plastic and everything. And this was a long time ago. I said, oh, yeah, I love it. It's one of my favorite movies. I love time travel. And he goes, so do I. I go, yeah, I know.
Yeah, we triggered you, Ned. That is a great film. I remember that I did not know. I remember seeing the movie. I didn't know it came from one of his books. I'm going to have to get it now.
Yeah, the book, the original title for the book was Bid Time Return. But they said that Americans weren't sophisticated enough to understand what bid meant. So,
right.
So they changed it to Somewhere in Time. I mean,
wow.
I always thought that was funny. I mean, I understood. Anyway, if you look for an original of it, it would be under Bid Time Return, but I think it's just astronomically expensive.
I don't need an original.
But if you look under Somewhere in Time, you can find reasonable books.
Uh-huh.
But book is pretty different from the movie. It's a different location.
Uh-huh.
It's Del Coronado here in San Diego instead of the Grand Hotel in Michigan.
Oh.
The reason that the film company chose the Grand Hotel was because it's pretty much, they keep it as a historical place. And Del Coronado is a still a real hotel that people go to all the time.
Oh,
and
I see.
And they have, you know, TV antennas, and they have all kinds
right.
of, kind of ruin it.
Well, I don't think the location mattered that much for that story.
Not really. But I remember when I found out that it was the book was set in Del Coronado. I waited because we were going to the Del for my parents' 50th anniversary. I waited to reread it at the Del.
Oh my!
I'd read it many times, but I was to read it at that hotel where it takes
uh-huh.
place is just mind blowing.
Right. Oh, that would add so much to the reading of a book.
It does. I think like science fiction or even time travel stories, it's hard because a lot of times that takes place in fantasy areas, you know, made up places.
Right.
But when it's a real place and
uh-huh.
and a real person, because Elise was based on Maude Adams, the actress. Not the modern actress, the old actress from the 1900s.
Uh-huh.
I always have to make sure I say that because people think it's Maude Adams, the Maude Adams that was in the Bond movies and things like that.
Right.
No. This one was long before she was even thought of.
Yeah, ancient relative, right. That's interesting. That would add a great deal to the story. I know that I live in South Florida, and I know how much we enjoy watching films that are filmed here.
Mm-hmm.
When we look and we say, oh, I know that hotel. Oh, I know that place. I know this. Yeah.
Actually, when I was watching the series Burn Notice, they talked about Miami and that there wasn't Really, any films or TV shows being shot in Miami at the time that they were doing Burn Notice, which
That's
is
correct.
really
They were
shocking.
very employer of the TV people down here. Yeah. Well, we had something called the Glades. But I don't know how long that one lasted.
Well, I mean, Miami Vice, of course, was set there, and they said
Oh,
that
yeah.
was really basically the last show before Burn Notice, and if you think about the time period between Miami Vice and Burn Notice,
Right.
that's a long time.
Yeah. Well, we're not LA, that's for sure.
Yeah, so they were having a ball because they were the only company. They didn't fight for locations, and
Yeah.
they didn't fight for actors. They just there with that they were the only game in town.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. I had a friend who actually worked for the Miami Vice people, and she was a location person. And she had to find the locations in the daytime, and then they would film there at night because they could control traffic better, at night. Less people around. But it was funny, they were filming in a neighborhood. She said that people, neighbors, would start to like mow their lawn at 3 a.m. because then she would have to go over and say, "Could you please stop mowing? You're interfering with the filming." And the person would say, "It's my front yard." And all that meant was, "Okay, here's $100. Stop mowing the lawn." You'd say, "Nope, that's the front yard. What about the backyard?" And then and there's another $100. And they had, and people started taking advantage.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise
Funny
me.
little story.
That doesn't surprise me at all. There
No,
was
not at all.
I found this out. There was in a novel I had read that people who were production managers and production assistants for commercials or TV shows in New York used to
Yeah.
carry 50 a wad of $50 bills to pay people off for location shooting.
Yes. Yeah.
And I was
Yeah.
that, and I thought, oh, that it's fiction, so it can't be real. So when I started studying, and I had friends that were from New York, I asked them. They said, "Nah, that was real. There, she got it."
Yeah. Well, it happened to my friend down here. Yeah. Doesn't
Yeah,
seem right, but
I know. She goes, the character in the book, but that's bribing people. And they go, if you want to survive, that's the only way you're going to be able to get locations.
that's right. That's right. Oh,
But
boy.
it's interesting, So I wonder if it's more money than it was back then, because that was the 70s.
They used to have to give it like $100 to people down here. So tell me, you said that you like time travel stories. Who else, or what else besides Somewhere in Time? What are some of your favorites?
The Time Machine.
The original
The
one. The
original
book.
one with Rod Taylor, who I
Yes.
adored.
Yes. That was a great one. I enjoyed that one. And oh my goodness, I can't believe I don't remember the name of the movie, but do you remember, and I think this was based on a book, it was a time travel movie where Jack the Ripper
It's one of my
comes
favorites. Time After Time. Great
Time
movie.
After time, that's it. Yes, then he gets chased by H.G. Wells, right.
Right, because he actually got through the time machine, and HG had to
That's
go
right.
back. My favorite part is at the end of the movie, and the girl he meets says, "Do you have to go back?" And he goes, "They're in like a museum that has all of his books." He goes,
Right.
"Yeah, I have to write half these books." But yeah,
Was a good one.
Malcolm McDowell. Oh, what's her name?
Oh,
She,
I don't
great
know. I don't.
actress, Oscar winner.
I don't remember, but I just remember how much I enjoyed it.
Yeah,
That was good.
but yeah, I've read the book, and there was also another book that I read It was actually by the guy who wrote the book that the professor was named for in Somewhere in Time. There's actually, he wrote a time travel book, and I have it, but it's in another room. It's a really good book. I think it was Finney. I think the name of the author is Finney.
Oh, Jack Finney, of course.
Yeah, but I can't remember the name of the book.
That one was a great one.
I love that. I also like time travel. There's a Twilight Zone, and that this one was written by, this is so sweet, this one was written by Rod Serling and Richard Matheson for the great Buster Keaton. And what it was, and I don't know, some people don't like it, which I can't understand at all, because it's adorable. It's a time travel episode where Buster Keaton is in, I think it's like 1912, and he works as a janitor for scientists. And the scientist created a time travel helmet, and he accidentally puts it on, he's playing with it, but he accidentally sets it off, and he ends up in the 50s, or the 60s, I can't remember what. And so, at the beginning, it's a silent movie, because everything is just like a silent movie, and then when he goes to the 50s, it's a normal TV show, and you can hear him talking and everything, and it's not just the little signage and stuff. It's so adorable. It's one of my top favorite Twilight Zones.
You know, I thought I'd seen all of the episodes, but I don't recall that one. That one sounds terrific.
I'm trying to remember Something in Time. I can't remember the name of it, but I think it's in the first season. But it's like such an adorable, it's so cute.
And it has to be, I'm sure it was well done if the beginning part is like a silent movie.
Yeah,
a real tribute to the old era.
And it's Buster, so, you know, an expert at the silent era.
Right. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, but that's one of my favorites.
I remember a Twilight Zone episode where a fellow who's rushed and unhappy and everybody's putting pressure on him. He's a salesman or a sales manager, and it's hard and difficult. And his car breaks down, and he manages, when he walks, he goes back to his hometown when he's 9 years old.
Oh, I remember that.
Remember that one?
Yes. That's the episode with Gig Young, isn't it?
Yes. I think you're absolutely right. And it really was a very moving episode because he's trying to warn his 9-year-old self, enjoy yourself now. This is the best time for you. This is the best summer of your life, Martin. Enjoy yourself now. But the poor 9-year-old kid is just utterly frightened by this strange man and runs away.
Can't blame him.
No. But then his father, who is, of course, now about the same age as him, since he's gone back in time, realizes who he is, and he says, this is 9-year-old Martin's time, not yours. You have to go back. It's not that bad, is it? And then Gig Young kind of, you know, recognizes it's not as bad. And he had a very good childhood. But that was probably one of my favorite time travel episodes on the Twilight Zone.
Yeah, that's one thing. I also like the sweet episodes, like the episode 2 with Charlie Bronson and Elizabeth Montgomery.
Oh, yes. They're the last two people, right?
Mm-hmm.
After war, and they're on the opposite side,
mm-hmm.
if I recall.
Mm-hmm. And Elizabeth Montgomery has one word.
I forgot what her... Oh, Eve. Right,
and but her word is Prusky. it's supposed to be Russian or whatever language it's supposed to be, but it's Russian for pretty.
Oh, okay.
That's the only word she speaks the whole time.
I know. I remember that. But I didn't remember the one word, but I remember that she barely spoke.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
But it was a great...
Yeah, those were great episodes. They
great
were
episodes.
Fantastic episodes.
See, that's when they knew what they were doing. They had somebody like Rod. You got these great great actors, great writers, and great actors, because they used all the Broadway actors.
Yes. And as you say, great writing.
Yeah.
Rod Serling was fantastic.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
You know, the Twilight Zone TV episodes, he himself turned into stories, and you can get the book by Rod Serling, the Twilight Zone short stories, based on, I don't know if he did it for all the episodes, but he did it for a lot of them, and those are wonderful books.
Yeah, I agree. It's really funny because I was thinking about the Twilight Zone and stuff. There's this one episode, if you're a writer, you really understand. It's with Keenan Wynn, and he's a writer, and he talks into a tape machine, and it's a dictaphone.
Right.
And he creates a world. He creates the people in his world. And my favorite part of that episode is the end. I don't want to give it away because you have to watch it. But whatever character he creates, they come to life. They just pop up when he describes them.
Wow.
And at the end, Rod Serling is sitting on his desk and think, well, of course, that's ridiculous. This could never happen. And Keenan has a huge envelope that says Rod Serling. And he goes, Rod. And he throws him in the fire. And he disappears. And Rod slowly is disappearing. And he shrugs and he goes, oh, well.
Oh, that sounds terrific. I think I remember that one. Yeah.
It's one of my favorites. There are certain ones that I'll never forget. That's one of them.
Right. Yeah.
We've come to the end. I want to let you say any books or stories that are coming out.
Let's see. Well, of course, The Writers of the Future, Volume 39, in May of 2023. And this month, I don't know when you're going to broadcast this, Sherry, but right now we're in October. This month, I will have a short story in an anthology that's coming out. It's actually an anthology that I believe the publishers are in England, but it's published in the U.S. As well, in Australia, and it's called Compelling Science Fiction. And it's funny that we talked about some of the older science fiction authors and stories, because what they do in their anthologies, they like to mix old and new. So they'll have some classic stories. I think in this book there's going to be stories like by H.G. Wells and some others, but then they also have modern writers who have written new stories, and I will have a story in there. So that's exciting. And if anybody wants to, I have there's one of my stories is free online. It's called Man on the Moon. You just go to Bane.com, www.bane.com/man-on-the-moon. Or just Google my name, Elaine Midko, Man on the Moon. That story is available. That was the story that got the 2022 Jim Bain Memorial Short Story Award. And I love that story. I love that story. So that's why I like to tell people about it. And I love it. As I wrote it, I loved it. And I was so happy when they selected it. And, you know, I don't know. You can find me on Facebook. Again, just look up my name and Facebook. Daily Science Fiction. I have one story in Daily Science Fiction. It was less than one page long. So it's funny what you can do, because I've written stories that are, 40 pages, and this story was less than one page, because Daily Science Fiction does flash fiction, very, very short fiction. And of course, Writers of the Future, Volume 37. So, I don't know. I guess just keep reading. That's all.
That sounds good. And are you on what social media, and do you have a website?
I am working on a website, but it's not up yet. But you can find me on Facebook. Again, I think I'm the only Elaine Midko on Facebook, so it should be pretty easy to find.
Aren't you not on any of the other science fiction? You're not on any of the social media?
No, I don't do the Twitter or Instagram. No.
Okay.
You know what it is? It's like what we were talking at the beginning, emerging from the pandemic and slowly going out. That's how I am with social media as well. It's like, hey, I'm on Facebook, okay? It's okay. I'm on. This is it.
Okay. All right. All right. Well, I want to thank you for taking time out of your day for coming back on my show.
Oh, thank you. It was a lot of fun.
Thank you. And thank you for chatting with Sherry.